Hello, I'm Dan Masterson, host of Strategy Talk, where we take a unique view of world events. We report news as history. With me today is the editor of StrategyPage.com and well-known military author, Jim Dunnigan. Associate editor and syndicated columnist, Austin Bay, also joins us.
Welcome, Austin and Jim. Thought we'd talk a little bit about cyber war as an overall topic. There's been stuff hitting the mainstream media over the last couple of weeks, and you know, it seems to be a constant topic. We've written some interesting stuff about China lately, Jim, on some of their activities. Could you go over some of the high points on that?
Yeah, China has basically developed a cyber war army over the last 10 years. We followed it fairly closely, so if you want to know what Chinese cyber war capabilities are, check out Strategy Page. What it comes down to is the Chinese government basically enlisted the Chinese hackers, who, like hackers worldwide, were playing around with the internet and going to places they're not supposed to be. China was starting to become a center for cybercrime, as Eastern Europe and especially Russia has become. The Chinese government quickly put a stop to that by basically executing people they caught. So don't say the death penalty is completely useless. But there was a carrot offered along with that stick, and that is they first organized patriotic hackers, and there are a lot of them in China, to help, you know, protect China and to go after China's perceived enemies. I mean, for example, in 1999, when the United States accidentally bombed the Chinese embassy in Serbia, the Chinese government stood aside and let their patriotic hackers have at it with the rest of the world. Now, these are rather low-level attacks, most of them. They were nuisance attacks, debasing websites, things like that. But the Chinese had already started to recruit the more capable of these hackers and offer them a deal. As long as they did some work for the Chinese government, and were including contract work, where the Chinese government paid good money, as it were, for foreign trade secrets, these hackers would have sanctuary for any cyber crimes they might commit anywhere else in the world. This eventually became known in the West, and along with the huge counterfeiting operations, you know, of consumer goods and even industrial goods in China, became a huge bone of contention between the United States and the rest of the Western world and China. China was also exporting hacking, illegal hacking. Now, China always denied this, but as we, again, as we've reported several times in Strategy Page, the Chinese hackers, for any number of reasons, you know, cultural, government policy, what have you, they weren't as disciplined as the East European hackers and basically Western hackers in general. Because of their sanctuary in China, these guys didn't really care if you traced them back to where they were coming from. They didn't really care if you caught them in the act. It was like the Wild West. Anybody could play. And if you brought something back, you know, for the motherland would throw you a bone, as well as a get-out-of-jail-free card. You know, if you got into trouble, even inside of China, you know, with illegal hacking. So over this decade, China has, in effect, created a very efficient recruiting and, how should I put it, training method for basically world-class hackers. But again, what hurt the Chinese was that as the world's internet security companies became more adept at tracing the origins of these attacks and, you know, in effect identifying who was doing it. For example, you can, just by going through the a malware that is caught, that is not erased after it's used, figure out, you know, the ethnicity of who did it, because they'll leave various syntax and language clues behind. The evidence piled up, you know, year after year, that a lot of the stuff that was going after Western trade secrets as well as government and military secrets was coming out of China. And, of course, that recently led to the recent indictment of five senior Chinese army officials known to be involved with the Chinese government, cyber war operations, most of which, as the indictments pointed out, were directed at stealing trade secrets for Chinese corporations to make them more competitive, worldwide, than actual, military secrets. Now, of course, a lot of these industrial secrets had to do with things like, military equipment. So it's clear that a lot of stealth technology, a lot of electronic warfare technology, despite redoubled efforts to, protect this stuff from hacking, has gone to China. The worst part of that is we don't exactly know how much of it the Chinese have. So this could provide some very unpleasant surprises if there were a major war with China. And the Chinese know that simply by that situation existing, the unknown, unknown as it were, they have an advantage. So they consider their hacking enterprises a big success. Now, getting back to this, the indictments of the five senior officials, the Chinese were very upset about this. I mean, they are really upset, which is good for the West because it means we finally got to them. But all it is a tactic that allows us to fight back, however, low level, as it were, at the Chinese without starting a war, because the Pentagon has been asking for years to be allowed to basically go on the offensive against, foreign hackers. That's a code word for Chinese because they're responsible for most of it. But the United States obviously doesn't want to start a war. Also, the whole business of cyber war is kind of murky since there's never been a full-scale cyber war yet. Now, theoretically, a full-scale cyber war could do enormous damage because, especially in the industrialized countries, and increasingly this includes China, because so many systems, especially utilities, electrical, power, you have it, are reachable, via hacking on the internet. But this idea of going after individuals and treating it as a commercial, transgression, a civil tort as opposed to a criminal matter, you can put some hurt on the people responsible. Now, how effective that will be in stopping the Chinese remains to be seen. But these indictments do basically say that, all right, the pushback is beginning, but the war is far from over.
Austin, what have you noticed different recently with some of the reports that have been coming out from the United States? It seems like this is the first time that they've come forward with some of this information, that these activities have been going on.
Dan, I don't think it's the first time you've seen information from the government or from government sources, or and I would include government sources being military officers, intelligence analysts, and even some companies that do contract work for the intelligence agencies and the Department of Defense, and let me also add the Department of Treasury and Department of Commerce. We've seen comments really for 20 years about the threat of industrial espionage or commercial espionage, attacks on websites is one aspect of it, attacks on servers, and then attacks on digital systems with proprietary information. And I didn't say classified information, but I said proprietary information that with commercial methodologies or commercial technology. There have been types of malware. And look, Jim wrote a piece for Strategy Page. I don't have it in front of me. I'm going to say 2001, 2002 about some of these programs going, not just attempting to penetrate into a data bank, but doing a mass search throughout out the internet to look for specific technologies or technologies that related to a technology that the hackers, the spies were interested in. So they were getting a meta picture, a big picture, so then they could focus on where to find the specific technology they were looking for. That's pretty sophisticated, Dan. And that's, 12, 13 years ago that we saw techniques like that. Now, what has changed, and Jim analyzed this very closely, is that we've named names. And we've demonstrated the ability to name names. I know the Chinese knew you could do this, and you could extrapolate from the analysis of the Stuxnet. Heck, that's a cyber weapon, which is what Stuxnet was, the analysis that slipped out. I remember we did a strategy talk about this, and Jim and I talked about that there were indications that you could find Russians, Israelis, and Americans, and maybe Germans, because it ultimately the specific type of digital device that was targeted was produced by Siemens, as I recall. So you may have gotten some help in building the Stuxnet. I mean, this was some of the speculation, but it's reasonable. It's reasonable speculation that you had some input from German programmers. You could. There were good guesses as to where Stuxnet came from. Well, if a company in, and then there were two commercial companies that kind of handled that open source. If they were doing it, the two commercial security companies were doing it, I guarantee you, intelligence agencies and national security agency could do it. So the Chinese, the point for the Chinese, they could reflect on that and say, "Wow, of course they can do that to us." But Jim made what I think is a really key operational point about the Chinese hacker system. You know, they do have hacker brigades, but this hacker system where they are using Jim, could you call them hacker vigilantes? I don't know. I mean,
they're organized vigilantes. The Chinese cyber militia.
All right, I like that. That's well, yeah, that's well, the militia. Yeah, the criminal element. The vigilantes will say the criminal, but the militia, I like that. Cyber militia is that they got arrogant. They thought they could get away with it. And they were slipshod. And now it's not – look, who got named those five senior military officers? Those guys aren't the ones. You probably have some superb skills themselves, but they're named because they can be pinned as the individuals who have directed it and have given orders or guidance or provided a sketch of what they want. They're the controllers. And so if you can work down, if you worked up to that, we know who some of the lower level hackers are, or even members, as Jim, we call them the China's cyber militia. Now, one other point on this. Jim was talking about using these as civil suits. I think that's an effective way. First of all, we got a lot of media play out of it. The United States did. And it was, as Jim noted, this is an example of pushback, and it's economic pushback. So you're pushing that lever. But you can't write off all the criminal components as well. And FBI has used a number of digital forensic tools to go after a range of cybercrime, Dan, including attacks on internet, on websites, but also some of the attacks or attempted thefts and sometimes successive thefts of financial institutions, where accounts are drained of a few pennies, but all told, it's several million dollars. And there were two large scale attempts to break into major U.S. banks in 2010. I'm not going to name the name of one of the major banks, but it's a big, huge New York international bank. The bank came back and said, actually, we stopped it. And then if you follow this article, the argument in the press for the next 5 or 6 months, the bank did stop it. However, apparently the attempted theft didn't get away with tens of millions of dollars, but they managed to filch a few tens of thousands before the bank's defensive system came in. And from the bank's point of view, that was a loss that they're prepared to cover. What was in the forensic analysis of it or trace of it is that the I'm saying the FBI, but also the banks and their security providers learned a lot about those attacks, and they learned where they were coming from, or had a very good idea where they were coming from. So, just as a takeaway from this is that justice is moves slowly, and oftentimes justice is behind the times and how one prosecutes certain kinds of crimes or is able to bring a civil suit, a lawsuit about a commercial transgression. But the security agencies, police, FBI are able now to build very convincing trails of evidence, correct trails of evidence. Last point on this is those five Chinese military officers know that. And even though it's a commercial suit, there's possibility of criminal activity, not about stealing quote-unquote state secrets, but stealing commercial secrets, and then, as Jim pointed out, passing them off to Chinese companies.
Right. What are the Russian activities that are going on? Because they mirror a lot of what is going on in China as far as illegal type activities that go on inside of Russia. But what sort of commitment does Russia have to probing our systems from a military standpoint or from a national standpoint?
The Russians are more dangerous because they use much more disciplined hackers who can basically pull off the perfect hack. That means they can get in, get something, then erase all their tracks as they get out. That means the victim never knows that they've been hit. That is the nightmare hack. And the Russians and various Eastern European, cyber gangs are very good at this. And they basically sell their services. There is a thriving, difficult to get to, black market, where you can basically hire all sorts of, cyber weapons. For example, DDoS, denial of service attacks. A lot of those are done by individuals simply looking to either, goof on a friend or, cripple a business rival, you name it. You can basically for, a few hundred, a few thousand dollars, hop by a DDoS attack. You can also buy other more complex services. They cost you more. It's a thriving business, and even the official cyber war operations will go in there and buy certain, technology and, zero-day exploits. These are flaws hopefully nobody else has found. That's why they're called zero-day, that allow you to get into certain, types of internet, software. These are auctioned off these days, and some of them go for hundreds of thousands of dollars. And the big thing about this market is these exploits are, once they become generally known, they are often patched. Now, that still leaves millions of computers that are vulnerable, but you only want to get the computers you specifically want to get into. And they're the ones that tend to get patched the quickest. Something else I should mention, there are some systems, the Holy Grail systems, as it were, the financial industry in particular, because we're a constant target for the hackers, because as Willie Sutton pointed out, the 1930s bank robber, that's where the money is. And that's why, you know, in the old days, you went and robbed banks. Of course, now you rob them via the internet and you try to get in there. But that's where the biggest offenses are. And that is a problem for the government. Because the financial industry will pay whatever they have to get the best people. And that doesn't leave much for the government. So when the government makes grandiose, you know, pronouncements about how they're going to use government, people and organizations to improve cybersecurity, that's a crock, because they simply can't hire the people. They have to basically rely on contractors, you know, people working for, commercial internet security firms. They cost an arm and a leg. There simply isn't enough talent to go around. But the way the market economy works, you know, the banks and some corporations, they have extremely tight security. It's not perfect, but it's multi-layered. We use, for example, a lot of custom software. There are customized versions of operating systems that are unique. Now, you can legally do this with Linux and what have you. It's less legal, I'm told, when you do it with, you know, Windows servers, you know, and what have you, or even Apple software. But it is done because it makes it more difficult. You know, a hacker trying to get in is suddenly facing an operating system he's unfamiliar with. So they will go for the low-hanging fruit. So anybody who isn't well-protected is vulnerable. And the basic problem is that there's not enough security to go around. So there's a lot of vulnerability.
Dan, I'd make a point on this, though, is that Jim talking about here in a free market economy and talent going to the financial services industry or very, very wealthy general dynamics, Lockheed Martin type huge corporations that are constantly threatened and need the security support. In China, the authoritarian government, dictatorship, they just tell the hackers, "You're working for us." I mean, that's and they make that so they're getting it, statistically they're getting the best because they're going to force somebody to work for them or to toss them in jail. It's I guess that's a recruiting technique too, isn't it, Jim? You know.
Yes. Well, the Chinese use that, but they again, since they've adopted the market economy, they basically apply a carrot and stick. Basically, they say if you do work for us, either contract work or less frequently, you know, free labor to protect, you know, say the large sectors of the Chinese economy, they will pay you or basically give you a get out of jail free card, or you will simply have contacts. You know, when government organizations start looking for computer services, security services, they'll say, well, this guy Wong is pretty good. He's trustworthy. You know, all the usual things. You know, we've used him before. And this is basically money. And, of course, on the stick is that if they catch you doing dirt in China, they will kill you. Boom, bullet in the back of the head. So they basically have a very efficient, you know, system. The gangs in Eastern Europe basically are criminal gangs, which have been around for, you know, centuries. And they got into the cyber, you know, criminal activities rather late. When they did, they basically employed a similar system. They go to hackers and say, "Hey, we hear you're doing such and such. Work for us and we'll pay you a lot of money. If you don't, we'll kill you." So this same, you know, extreme carrot and stick approach has been applied very successfully in Eastern Europe and in China. You can't really use it in the West because, you know, your stick isn't as pointy.
Yeah, we just threw Mitch Kapoor's butt in jail and didn't let him have access to electronic devices.
But eventually they'll declare that a crime against humanity. You won't be able to do it anymore.
Right, yeah. The one thing that doesn't get talked about a lot, Jim, but actually when I teach my e-commerce classes, when I teach them, I talk about, well, the biggest breaches have actually been from internal sources such as Snowden or socially engineered, which it has started to be talked about a little bit more in the open now about, it's really a combination of people and digital access. So they get somebody on the inside to do something for them or trick them to do something for them. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, yes, this is something, you know, about 10, 11 years ago, I did a book called The Next War Zone, which described, it turned out to be a little too accurate, you know, how this whole cyber war, you know, business was going to work. And I mentioned there, because even then it was known, it was coming to be known, that yes, most of the what we call hacks, you know, penetration of computer security, are inside jobs. Now, this simply means that adroit hackers understand, and this was Mr. Michnik, he was one of the first proponents of this. He was the evil hacker. He eventually went to jail, got out, and now he makes a lot of money as a consultant. But when he had to testify, he said, look, you know, a lot of what I did had nothing to do with hacking. It had everything to do with just talking something out of somebody. In other words, the classic grifter, you know, the confidence artist, whatever you want to call him, you know, sweet-talking crook, can still be very effective. And so the cyber war organizations that are most adroit at combining the technical aspects of hacking with the, you know, no, that would in effect tell you, you have to find out this particular password or this particular bit of information, whatever, you know, where this equipment is located physically. And the easiest way to find that out is simply to get on the phone, impersonate somebody. You basically need a professional, you know, a guy who can steal with his tongue. And there are a lot of people out there, and what's made it more common is that a lot more, you know, hacker organizations or cyber war organizations have discovered that this is the way to do it. But for high security systems, where, again, like in the financial industry, where there are layers and layers, you know, you have some very clever and smart people, you know, developing these security systems. A lot of them, some of them are former, you know, criminals themselves, who work under very, well, I won't go into that. But anyway, you can exploit their knowledge without exposing yourself to, you know, their downside. These systems are extremely difficult to penetrate, and often the best option is to use just hackers. You know, we cannot, it's too much time, it's too difficult, they have too many traps. It's not really worth the effort of trying to, you know, unleash our professional grifters to do a social engineering, you know, attack. So, you know, here's what we do know. See if you can get in. And for, you know, world-class hackers, you know, there's a few hundred people, mostly guys, who can't get a date. They, until they have a lot of money, but anyway, they, if you have some of those working on a problem, they can do it. And this, for example, is why many of the computer security companies have come to hold these public competitions. Even some of the major companies like Google, they will offer rewards or have hack-offs, as it were, where people, you know, basically get a fairly substantial prize for being the first one, you know, to get into a particular server or what have you. So, yes, there are two sources of, you know, two types of weapons, you know, in cyber warfare. The classic, what we think of as, you know, a geek, you know, sweating over a hot keyboard. But then there's also what most people don't realize, just some guy getting on the phone saying, hey, I'm Joe from engineering, the blah, 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 blah. You know, talk the talk and get somebody who's, you know, a little, you know, not really paying attention while they're talking to you, just to let loose with one tiny bit of information. And as any intelligence, you know, manager, spy master, whatever you want to call it, can tell you, you can take a lot of little bits, if you get the right bits, and put them together and have an extremely valuable, you know, a pot of information. And this is what the social engineering, you know, often does. So it's a combination of the two. But if push comes to shove, you get back to pure hacking, and that is extremely difficult to put off. A, because there are very few world-class people who can sit down and plan and carry out an attack like this. And most people don't know about it because this makes terrible cinema. You know, you can't really make an exciting film. And people have tried about people planning and carrying out, you know, these high-end hacks. It's just, it's pure geek, you know, and the audience just isn't large enough. So a lot of people aren't aware of that. And fortunately for us, you know, there simply are not enough of these resources available to use them. So The organizations that are most successful are the ones that combine the social engineering, you know, with the pure hacking.
Right.
Jim, wait a minute. They just haven't pushed the envelope far enough. I've already figured it out. You got a Goldfinger type character, and he's surrounded by beautiful girls. And what he does is all of the beautiful girls, is each one of them is quote unquote part of his targeting operation that he uses the marks a lot. And here's one that here's the malware. Here's this. So the movie director does is it's all, you know, marks a lot with all the code information on the bodies of beautiful women. You don't tell me that wouldn't be watched. They'll make $1 million.
Well, no, they have
several hundred million.
A billion. The more successful movies about hacking involve more emphasis on the social engineering. The point I was making was that the pure hacking attack, which is rare, that's another point to remember because there are so few people who can do it. That is a snooze fest as far as good cinema goes. But the social engineering is perfect for films. And, you know, whether you're using a honeypot, you know, women, sex, whatever. By the way, I should point out that the intelligence agencies have a lot of traditional tools like extortion, blackmail, and what have you. That's another way to get little bits of information. I mean, the idea of the tradecraft, the way this, as they call it, tradecraft works, is you target somebody to give a bit of information that they don't realize is so valuable. So they don't feel bad about betraying their country. They just want this little, you know, what's the password or what's the location? Where is this? So they think you're going to do some kind of, you know, burglary or whatever. But often they're not. They just want to know where it's physically located so they can do a little preparation for a hack, which depends on knowing, you know, which server they're going after. So there are many ways to play this. And as cyber war techniques mature, basically, it becomes a lot like classic spy craft. In other words, putting together a team, as it were, of people and techniques to achieve the goal. And so, again, as I think Dan was pointing out, that the classic idea that hacking is all about, you know, guys pounding on keyboards and what have you, that is misleading, because that's only a small part of it. The big picture is teamwork and big teams, and not all of them even touching your computer.
Right. No, it's coming out now slowly into the press as details surface different ways that Snowden actually used some social engineering techniques to get access to areas that he wasn't supposed to. The press misreported early on that somehow he had been given access to these areas, but it's now coming out that he engineered his way into those, not necessarily with software, but by manipulating his bosses and doing other things like that.
Yeah, what he had originally been given was knowledge of, you know, where the forbidden fruit was that he did not have access to, and he was clever enough to figure out, you know, social engineering, you know, techniques to get what he wasn't supposed to have. The same thing happened with that other guy, that army, you know, specialist who was
the private,
Matt, whatever his name was,
Bradley Manning.
Right. He basically did the same thing. He figured out how to get around the security they did have and basically walk away with all those documents. Now, again, that's the government. A bank would rarely do that, because the government cannot afford the people the bank has. You know, I mean, I've had people, you know, in banking, you know, internet security, laugh about how, you know, basically point out that how laughable the government, you know, security measures were to allow people like Manning and Snowden get away with what they got away. So they'd never get away with that in the bank. And they couldn't go into too much detail, obviously, but from what I know from other people who are basically the people that are given instructions, as it were, by the banking security people, there are multiple layers of no-nos, and it's not so easy to use social hacks on a organization that is well protected against them.
Yeah. So I guess what we could say is the government is our weakest link.
Well, yeah, well, the government is always has been the weakest link in terms of espionage. I know when I was in the Army years ago, I had only a secret clearance. But, you know, so many of the procedures you had to go through struck me and other guys. You know, again, we were fairly smart guys working in a high-tech, you know, area. we would sit around and talk. I said, that's stupid. You can get around this by doing that. And we're saying, if we could see this, you know, a bunch of teenage, you know, techies, you know, what would the professionals, you know, spies be doing? And it turns out they were often penetrating it because, yes, you know, with half a brain, you can figure out how to get it. And that was mainly because the Army, Department of Defense, they could not afford the best security people. In other words, right. The best security money can buy is unaffordable to the government.
Right. So, Austin, I'll let you wrap this all up with sort of where is the future of all this going? What's going to be happening?
Look, you guys have already covered it, Dan. I mean, when you're kicking off discussing the quote-unquote social engineering, and then I think this is a rich topic for a future strategy talk. And Jim's talking about, as he says, as these cyber techniques, digital techniques have matured, you've gone back to a classic operational team formation and intelligence gathering, and also in criminal organizations, to either launch attacks, to retrieve targeted information that's either spying, and some of the targeted information could be you're emptying somebody's bank account, so it's robbery. And you're seeing really a classic the classic trend in this. Here's the new technology. Oh, gee, wonder weapon, and then it becomes assimilated into the an operational system.
Right.
You already covered it, but I guess that's I'm putting it in. And somewhat in doctrine terms, but heck, at the level of sophistication that some of these criminal organizations are operating at, they are operating on a doctrine.
Right. And people need to realize they are organizations. These aren't single hackers. These are multiple people working in various ways to penetrate these systems.
You know what? I'll make one last point, point on this. That's why, to go back to the discussion of the five senior Chinese military officers who are indicted. These men they run operations. They not only run them, they conceive of them. They conceptualize. And it's often hard to quote unquote to get the head of the mob. I'm not going to say that they're the head of the mob, but they're very, very senior members use that analogy, and usually those guys are able to hide themselves if they're a criminal gang behind lawyers and beyond extradition. Yes, they're military officers, so they're beyond U.S. extradition, but they are not beyond the reach of other techniques.
Right.
Jim pointed that out too. Well, so, all right.
Well, hopefully people will continue to read Strategy Page and see our in-depth analysis on some of this stuff that we do on a regular basis. Thank you very much, gentlemen, and we'll talk to you next time.
Bye, guys.
Until next time. Bye-bye.